And now, our reading from the New Testament is from the letter of Paul to the Galatians. Chapter 5, we'll read from verses 13 and then from 22 and 23. Actually, this is from the paraphrase of the Bible by Eugene Peterson, who does a wonderful effort on helping us understand, you know, some of the idioms and phrases and explaining as we go through. So you may recognize this passage. It does include Paul referring to Jesus' statement to love our neighbor as ourselves. And then also there's Paul's statement about the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, generosity, self-control. And Eugene Peterson relates that list, but uses different phrases to say what Paul was talking about. For everything we know about God's Word is summed up in a single sentence, the apostle writes. Love others as you love yourself. That's an act of true freedom. But what happens when we live in God's way? God brings gifts into our lives, much the same way that fruit appears in an orchard. Things like affection for others, exuberance about life, serenity. We develop a willingness to stick with things, a sense of compassion in the heart, and a conviction that a basic holiness permeates things and people. We find ourselves involved in loyal commitments, not needing to force our way in life. And how he describes the word self-control, he says, able to marshal and direct our energies wisely. So a phrase I wrote to some friends a few years ago that I repeat now and then. It was about, for those guys I hear every now and then say, boy, it's like you can't hardly even say anything to a woman anymore or give her a compliment without her calling you a creep or filing a lawsuit. I said, to those guys, I said, here's the rule of thumb. If you are a creep, everything you say sounds creepy. I mean, just kind of a basic phrase with a little lasciviousness, just, it's not the words, it's where it comes from and what it seems the intention is. Well, I think that Paul is saying something like that, but flipped around. Instead of creepiness, it's love. That love works in that way. If you regard God and yourself and the world and other people within the framework of love, then the fruit of that looks like love, joy, peace, patience, faithfulness, generosity, self-control. That's what it looks like. See, Paul was in a long, well, nicely call it a discussion, a pretty spirited argument about what you have to do and be in order to be a Christian. And many were arguing that of course, you must first of all become a good God-fearing and observant Jewish person, and then added to that is Christianity. And so what they called the law included ceremonial laws and as well as moral laws and dietary laws, and he was talking specifically about circumcision at the time too, and people were saying you have to follow all those laws because God gave us those. And Paul is saying this is the key thing. What you must know more than anything is love. That is the number one. What they were concerned about is, well, if you don't follow even one law, then what does any law mean? We're still involved in those kinds of arguments and confusion, even within the Methodist church now. People say, well, if you don't follow this one rule in the church, then I guess we don't even need any rules at all. Well, Paul was saying in very much the same way that many say today, if we act, first of all, out of love, and then even if we make mistakes, with good intentions, if we continue to love and hear people and work on forgiveness, if we love, all the other things bear the fruit of love. And the fruit of love, the Apostle Paul says, looks like this. There was a bit in his discussion, his argument, that we didn't read through, because he said, you know what the fruit of not having love looks like. It looks like lasciviousness and drunkenness and envy and greed, and he has another list just like that. If it looks like that, then it's not from love. And therefore, you know, you can have laws about that. But he said, the law for us as a people were like training wheels. But now we know God through Jesus. We know the God of love, and what he describes as we know, as a sacrificial love, a giving of ourselves to each other and of the world. And if we do that, then of course we're not going to go, what my dad often says, beyond the ditches, into the ditch. We're going to be guided by love. That's what it's going to look like. Well, that's the only required part of the sermon this morning. So that is the main message. If you don't want to hear anything more, you can just go on out and, you know, leave something in the offering plate on the way out. The rest of the sermon is optional. I want to tell you a story and then say a few more words in illustration, and to help us understand what this people of God is, what we imagine, how this focusing on love and how we care for each other and treat each other changes individuals and changes the world. I don't know how Keith and Linda first met, although knowing Linda, she probably just called up a nearby high school and said, I want you to give me a name of a kid that this would work out for, or maybe a school counselor or something. She just would have taken charge and made it happen. Linda and Keith both lived in Minneapolis. And Linda and her husband, Vin, and her family decided that they would pay full tuition for a student from Minneapolis to go to Rust College. And Linda and I are both on the board down at Rust College, and you likely know Rust is an historically African-American college in Holly Springs, Mississippi, begun by Methodists right after the Civil War, and began as a full school, a high school, so that young people and young adults could learn enough to then begin a college curriculum. And it really changes the lives, you know, from the very beginning of so many people. And even today, over a third of the young people who enter Rust College come from families that live below the poverty line. And that's a low line. I believe it's still around like $24,000 for a family of four, if you could imagine that. And a majority of the students are the very first in their families to go to college, let alone graduate. Keith was in that situation, lived in Minneapolis. His father was not has not been in the picture. His mother was in prison at the time. And so Linda and her family became really his family for this purpose. Her home address was his home address for the college, and he went off to school. And he wasn't used to being off on his own like that. And he started off fairly good and then stopped going to class. You know, no one was there to say this is how you do it and how you keep on track in college. And he was missing a lot of classes, and you know, the laws have changed and the rules have changed since, you know, the 60s or early 70s when people went to college. The college might call up the parents. Well, there's privacy laws. They can't do that now. So what they did was they sent a letter to Keith's home address, to Keith. And it was about his absences and what a problem that was. But here's the key. They wrote it on a postcard. And if Linda happened to read it, you know, that was fine, I guess. Well, Linda called Keith right away. He didn't answer. His phone wasn't on. And she tried a few times. He didn't call her back. So she called the dean of students You're getting an idea of the kind of a person and personality Linda is. And she tells the dean of students about what's going on with Keith. And the dean calls, no response, goes over to Keith's room. I think got him out of bed that first time. And however that first meeting was, the old come-to-Jesus meeting, it turned into a real mentorship with the dean and with Keith. And the dean did this with a number of students. It's a small school. People have a sense of a connectedness to each other. It's a school that takes its church connection very seriously. And Keith began going more regularly. Perhaps that was following the law. But at some point got that spirit of learning, and was became someone who was totally on track to graduate. And it was during that time, and maybe it was at graduation time itself, when Linda and Vin and her adult daughters came down to Rust. I remember meeting them that time, and that was probably the first time I'd met Keith. And they took Keith and a friend of his out to a very nice place to go to supper down in Oxford, Mississippi, about a half hour to the south. And it was nice. I'm not sure it was really Italian place, a nice pasta place to eat. And they came in fairly early, and there were lots of tables open, but they had to take a seat and wait. And then other people came in, and they were seated. And I don't know how long it was before Linda went up to the host or the maitre d' and asked why they hadn't been seated, and he had some sort of excuse. And then it became clear what Keith and his friend already knew. They weren't being seated because this was an interracial group. And I can't remember in the story what kind of fury Linda unleashed on that host and on the owner and the mayor and the governor about that. But it was also a key learning and insight for her too. People say, oh, we're all over that now. And this was, you know, probably just about 10 years ago. That, you know, what Keith and his friend and many other people know, that it's a daily experience to try to change these situations and people's hearts so that they act out of love and at least a sense of a fairness, a kind of racism that Keith encountered every day, let alone the other issues he had coming from a poor family and his mother's incarceration and his father's absence and all of that. What Keith had been able to do by God's help and plan to change his life. Keith graduated. He went on to graduate school, got a master's degree in social work, and worked as a social worker for a few years and touched many lives, and then came back to Rust College to be a teacher and an assistant professor there. Rust College's motto, which given developed by the very first president of Rust College, A.C. MacDonald, is, "And ye shall know them by their fruits." By their fruits. What they do, what they produce, how they act. And there's no doubt that there's a great effort to say, don't just label people and decide whether or not they're worthy, but see what they do and then have insight. Well, that's a great message, and we often are judged by then what we do. But even better, if we can look at people and see what they are as created and given by God, what we will be and shall be together when we are the people of God. So the fruit is just an indication of that love, this sacrificial love that changes everything, that changed the world and all of our lives for what God has done for us and in us. I'm sorry to say that the rest of our story is that Keith passed away at a very young age. He had an illness, an unusual illness, was in the hospital for months, and then passed away from a heart attack before he reached age 30. But think of all that had happened, the fruit of love that had happened, that his reconciliation with his mother, his education, the many lives that he touched. Linda isn't the hero of that story. She did many wonderful things, she and her family, but also the dean of students and many teachers and many people who touched Keith's life. But he really is the one who did all of that. And finally, it's God. As the Apostle Paul wrote in another one of his letters, I planted the seed. Apollos, another disciple, watered. But God gave the growth. Our series this last week has been about planting the seeds, giving the growth, the care, rather, and the nurture of one another and feeling the nurture for ourselves. And then that growth, that transformation that comes in the lives and in the world. And then we see the fruit within our community. We imagine, partially now complete in God's plan and dream for us, imagine the people of God and all the fruit of the Spirit that comes when we love in these ways. I've said before that it's not just a matter of do you believe in God? That becomes a mental exercise very quickly. Deeper questions involve, do you believe that people are children of God, that all are children of God, that God has planted these seeds in all of us? Do you believe that? Do you believe that people can change and transform? If you don't believe that, then it's hard to know if you really believe in the God that Jesus showed us. Do you believe that the world can change? If you believe that, then you can believe in God. And if you believe and you love with that tremendous sacrificial love, then you have already become part of that kingdom, that family of God. And that's what we live out. The seeds that we plant, sometimes never even knowing all that we've done and has been done because of these actions. The care that we give for each other, the care that we're aware of receiving, and that transformation. A transformation that comes when we break cycles, when we learn new things, when we're more open than what we were before, when we forgive. Because otherwise it's just back and forth. We're just having our strings pulled by society and other people until we take that freedom of love that Paul talks about. When we make something new by our forgiveness, by our love, loving just because, not because we're part of a transactional relationship. It's breaking those cycles that brings the transformation. Imagine the people of God when they act like that. Believe it. Imagine it. Be that love. Amen.